Hello everyone, welcome back to Time with Tracy, and this is your girl Tracy, here again, as I said, every Tuesday, 5:30 p.m. on 101.5, which is UMFM, the only radio station for University of Manitoba, and let's get into it. You know, I just wanted to know, how is everyone's Black History Month going? I hope you know you're getting involved in different. I've seen that there are so many different activities, different programs, that different organizations, different on-campus associations, student clubs are coming up with. So try to attend either one or two. You know what? Even if you want to attend all of them, there is definitely no problem. Just try to attend some, get to learn some more history. I mean, we have a whole month. I'm sure you, even if it's little, you can definitely learn something. So as you know, according to some of the feedback that I got last week, people told me that they really loved that episode where I was talking about, like, you know, Black mental health and all that. And I hope, you know, as I was talking about it, about the issues and how we can get better and how we can support Black people and how we can support them not only in Black History Month, but how we can support them mentally so that we as Black people are able, obviously, to heal from the trauma and to heal from any transgressions or from anything that we could face in the future. And we are still also facing in the present. So I'm so glad that people engaged with the episode. I'm so glad that they loved the episode. And I'm so honored that they even listened to the episode. Well, one thing, as I said, as I mentioned in our last week's episode, is that I was definitely going to name a few Black people. Black people, meaning like whether women, men, anyone in general who have done some amazing stuff for the Black people, standing people who have lived before or maybe could be living today, just so that we can, you know who they are. And it's a dedication for them, for, you know, February being Black History Month. So this week I have for you some amazing people, and one of my favorites, I literally just studied about this, this lady or this woman in my women and gender classes, women and gender studies, and should be obviously the first person, Kimberly Crenshaw. So Kimberly Crenshaw is an educator that coined the term intersectionality, which basically discusses how different identities, for example, race, gender, classism, all these kinds of things can kind of collide and combine together to lead to even more discrimination in the community. So I feel like, you know, if you have time, please definitely go read her papers, go read some of the stuff that she has written. I have been so inspired with the work she has been doing. So definitely go there and take a look. Another woman who definitely did some amazing stuff is Jane Boleyn. So this was actually the first Black woman judge in the US. And for those who don't know Jane Boleyn, we see that she made history over and over again. She was, first of all, the first black woman to graduate from Yale Law School, the first Black woman to join the New York City Bar Association, and as I said, the nation's first Black female judge. So we are seeing, one thing I would want to say is that the reason as to why I mentioned some of these people, personally, I have, you know, heard about different people in the Black community who have made some amazing changes or who have done some amazing stuff. And when I hear stories, wow, like if this person could do it, then why can't I do it? So sometimes you might be wondering, you know, why do people always mention things like, you know, this person was the first black person, this person was maybe the first indigenous person, this person was the first person to do this? Because sometimes it just wants to create this inspiration in us that just because someone else hasn't done it yet, it doesn't mean that it's not possible, or it doesn't mean that it's impossible, or it doesn't mean that you shouldn't be the one who is going to make this first change or to cause this first, you know, this first amazing thing in general. Another person I want to talk about is Marsha P. Johnson. Marsha P. Johnson fought for gay and transgender rights, and we see obviously that this is something that's still going on, because we see that people of the LGBTQ plus community, and on top of that, trans people are still being, you know, they are still facing so much of racism. They are facing so much of, like, you see, they can't get mental health services. Sometimes they don't offer them to them. Sometimes they refuse to give them jobs just because they are trans. So many things that happen, but she fought for the gay and transgender rights. She's celebrated today as a veteran of the Stonewall in protests, a pioneering transgender activist, and a pivotal figure in the gay liberation movement. Monuments to her life are planned in New York City and her hometown, which is Elizabeth, New Jersey. Another person that I would love to talk about today, I really got a couple of people, so I'm just like scrolling through the list just to remember all this one, because there's so many black people who have done some. A person that I have today, Howard Thurman. He was the scholar whose words actually inspired Martin Luther King Jr. He was a shy man who didn't lead marches or give dramatic speeches, but Howard was a spiritual genius who transformed history. Thurman was a pastor and a professor and mystic whose groundbreaking book, Jesus and the Disinherited, was condemnation of a form of Christianity which Thurman said was far too often on the side of the strong and the powerful against the weak and oppressed. So basically, we just see that he was an inspiration to one of the greatest people, that Martin Luther King. Then the last person that I would want to talk about today is Albert Murray. He changed the way people talked about race. He was never a household name, but Albert was one of the most black thinkers of the 20th century. The essayist and social critic changed the way people talked about race by challenging black separatism and insisting that the black experience was central to the American culture. He once remarked that American society is inconstably mulatto because black and white people are inextricably bound to. So these are some of the people mentioned having stuff, and they are not the only ones. There are so many other people, but I just wanted to highlight those for today. And trust me, in case you think of someone you feel like I should highlight, just shoot me a message in my Instagram at amtrayc, which is at @am_trae_c. Tracy. All right. So this week's topic is going to be about access to mental health services, and this is not necessarily just access to mental health services as a black person, but also in general, access to mental health services for me, even if I'm black, for an indigenous person, for any person who is having mental health issues or who needs some mental health advice or who needs to see a mental health professional. So many times I would say that, you know, from the readings I have done, and maybe when other people talking about mental health, you see that some of the barriers that we face when it comes to mental health is just that there is no access. Because you'll find that, you know, a person will recognize in themselves, or they'll see it in themselves that, hey, I actually do need someone. I do need to talk to someone. I do need access. Maybe I could speak to this person. Maybe I need to get some medication, or all these different kind of issues. But sometimes, even if you recognize a problem and you have no way to make that problem better, then that is still not the solution, because we need for everyone to be able to access mental health services or mental health professionals in order for them to, you know, take care of them, or to take care of themselves. So we are going to just be discussing different ways that we feel that community, the government, or even if it could be like a society or a group, an organization that you work for, it could be a workplace, a company, can create access to mental health. Now, number one is ensuring network adequacy. Employees or students or people who cannot access affordable care often go without. So, which I think this kind of says, let me give an example as to why sometimes people go without mental health facilities. Obviously, if a person is struggling with one of the biggest problems that we have in the world, which is poverty, or they are trying to feed their family of four, you'll find that a person will not choose to go and pay for a $100, $150 with a therapist, with a psychologist, and leave their children or leave themselves to go hungry. So what does that show us? It shows us that even though there are these mental health facilities that are around, sometimes they are too expensive, and mental health, you know, taking care of mental health starts to look like a privilege for only the middle class people and the upper class people, because the people in the lower class, or let's say the people who are, you know, in between lower class and some even in the middle class themselves, they have so many other things, and they have so many other, you know, things that they have to cater for themselves, that they will not consider mental health as a first priority because it's so expensive and sometimes it's so far away. You end up finding that in some countries, mental health facilities, mental health professionals are only in the city, which means that people who live outside that do not get access to this service. But some of the ways that I feel like we can increase this is the same way we have, if we treated mental health facilities or mental health professionals or mental health services the same way as we treat having a flu or cold, which means, for example, setting up mental health clinics, whereby we know that at least in this specific number of kilometers, these people have access to mental health facilities. Because just because a person is not receiving, you know, these services and all these, and they're not able to take care of their mental health, it doesn't mean that, you know, they'll never face such. You find that actually there are so many issues that go around, but just because of the different, you know, categories of things that a person has to take care of, mental health does not fall under that priority. Another way is to expand the collaborative care model. And this gives an example of how we see that the different care professionals or primary care offices, for example, when you go obviously to visit a clinic, a walk-in clinic, a hospital, you meet with a doctor. That doctor might not necessarily be concentrated on mental health, but obviously you'll go to them, maybe you need to check out your throat, your stomach, and all this. But integrating mental health and primary care offers the opportunity to improve access to care outcomes and lowers overall healthcare costs with a holistic approach to care. The one thing that we know in an economy is that when something is scarce, or when a product or a service is scarce or is not found everywhere, you find that sometimes it can get monopolized, or because of the scarcity, it gets expensive. But if the government works in a way that, let's say, every clinic, every place that offers healthcare services has mental health, or has a mental health professional, or has an expertise in mental health, it means that it's going to increase the number of places that mental health services can be received, and hence it will lower the cost of mental health overall. So it will also help to effectively deliver mental health and substance use care also, which is, this recommendation identifies, you know, key steps and health plans and in which employers can take to promote and expand the collaborative care model. Another one is expanding telepsychiatry. You know, given the shortage of psychiatrists in communities, which I have literally just been talking about, and the opportunity to effectively connect to care using technology, the recommendations identify the steps needed to promote and expand the use of technology for employees to connect to care. We see that actually right now there are so many different companies and different different companies, I would say, are coming up with these applications that you can download, obviously, and then when you download them, you can speak to a nurse. Actually, you can speak to a nurse. You can tell them, you know, this is how I'm feeling. This is what is going on. So expanding psychiatry also on that level, whereby when a person downloads, even if they cannot go somewhere as far, as I have suggested, that as I've talked about the fact that sometimes the psychiatrist or the mental health professionals are far. But nowadays, we see that there's an increase in the number of people that have a technology, that have technology or that have a device that has internet and technology. So increasing these services to also be easily accessible anywhere that a person is helps, because we are seeing that these companies are only creating applications which will have access to, let's say, physical conditions mostly. For example, you'll speak to the nurse and she'll tell you, or the nurse will, he'll tell you that this is your situation, you're having a headache and all this. Maybe they'll prescribe you something and all that stuff. But obviously, when you speak to them and you're like, you know, but I've been feeling like this, I've been feeling like, let's say, depressed, and you maybe describe these symptoms, you find that these people, even if they're professionals, their advice will be to go and speak to a mental health professional, right? Which is true. But the fact that that application doesn't have a mental health professional for them to refer you to, it makes it difficult, because if they can't do anything about it and you can't do anything about it because you don't have access to the services, that is technically where the issues come in or where things go wrong. So I would say that, you know, using the technology that we have right now and increasing, you know, resources to all the areas that we can increase the resources to is actually a very good way to ensure that people have access to mental health services wherever they may be. I think one important thing before I actually forget that I feel would also, you know, target mental health is so many of these insurance plans that you see talk about how, you know, if it's a pre-existing condition, they won't insure it. Or even you find so many of the plans, yes, they include, you know, prescriptions, they include the physical stuff, but you find that they do not include a visit, or they do not include healthcare, which is basically the mental part of the healthcare. So allocating, or the government, you know, coming up with a way in that there's allocating funding to such stuff, or to, you know, encourage the public insurance plans to also bill or to cater for the mental health side of it. Because the truth is that, yes, it's true, we lose people, you know, which is sad, we lose people to accidents, we lose people to all these different mental health issues that could come up, like maybe cancer and stuff. But we definitely also lose to mental health issues, you know, to suicide, to schizophrenia, to bipolar, to depression, to anxiety. All these different mental health issues all do sometimes lead to the same thing, which could be death, or even which could be separation from families. And they actually do affect our economy overall, and in the end. So us having insurance plans, because to be honest, if a person is paying for an insurance plan and it caters the physical stuff, and they do not want to obviously step out because they're already paying for this insurance, which is obviously, it's not cheap, it's expensive for some people, they can sometimes they look at it and they have to weigh their issues, or they have to weigh their problems, and they're like, you know what, if it's not falling under this specific insurance plan, then I cannot go outside of it, because it's like you're paying, they will look at it as they are paying double. So trying to make the insurance plans include mental health is such a big part, because it means that as a person pays for insurance, they'll feel like, you know, I'm already paying to get this service, I'm already paying to access mental health services. So in that way, it's even much easier to push people or to encourage people and to break down the stigma when they already have access to these services. Another way is to actually allocate funding to research that surrounds mental health services. We see so many times, you know, research grants are going around, funding for this discovery, funding for that. Why is it that there's no funding for men's stuff? You find that actually funding to do with funding that, you know, is allocated specifically to mental health is sometimes rare, or it's usually categorized in a big category whereby mental health will not be chosen. Let me give an example of this. If someone says, you know, we are funding a project and everyone's submitting your projects, you won't find that so many of these projects include mental health. So the other projects, because of their dominancy in you know, the applications and stuff, and because of the familiarity that people have with those other categories, they end up choosing those categories. But when we have allocation for funding that is specific to mental health, it means that, you know, regardless of whichever project is chosen in that specific maybe batch of applications, that money, that specific funding is going to go to mental health. You know, it could be going to discovering mental health medications, it could be going to discovering mental health therapies, anything, therapies or communities, but the whole point is that money will be allocated to making mental health better and to pushing mental health out of an area that it is still in, an area that whereby it is still stigmatized and not being cared for. Another one is another way is to incorporate mental health into our daily lives. You know, some companies, it's true, and some workplaces have or cater for mental health. You know, when you get a job there, they will explain to you and they'll, you know, say if you need help, maybe call this number. Or even when you go to some universities and some schools, they have counselors, they have therapists and all these things. But sometimes in a world, when we find two or three workplaces that have incorporated mental health, we think that it's happening everywhere. But the truth is that it's really not. Sometimes when we go to a school that is, you know, has the mental health services in it, we think that it's everywhere. But the truth is that it's not true. So many institutions, so many workplaces, so many companies do not care about their workers' mental health. And just because you know two examples that do, it doesn't mean that you have not forgotten 3,000 examples of workplaces or institutions that actually do not care or do not incorporate mental health into their policy. So one of the reasons as to why I support, you know, incorporating mental health in a workplace and in our life, one big thing is that it actually fights the stigma. When a person is in an environment whereby they know that if they face an issue with mental health, or even if they have no idea about what mental health is, or it's a new concept to them, or they have had different things when it comes to mental health, but the area that the space they are working in, the space they are studying from, gives them a platform without shame, without embarrassment, to actually find out or to seek help, that is already breaking down the stigma in that specific community, right? Because the only other place when people talk about mental health is hospitals. And we do know most times hospitals are not the place to be, or they are seen in a negative connotation because of the fact of you're going to the hospital, you're probably sick, maybe you've lost someone in the hospital, surgery and all these things. When you talk about mental health, it has only been put in a light of hospitalization and everything. But when we incorporate it into our lifestyle, it actually opens our eyes, because we now start to see that, hey, this is how mental health is. We even start to share stories. You find that even the person who is the employee of the month, yes, they could be having a mental health issue, but imagine if another worker sees that, hey, this person says, you know, they are bipolar, they are taking their medication, and they're even still performing at work. They are still performing amazing in school or in their different leadership capacities. That's actually inspiring, because if that person who is seeing this person, you know, succeed, you know, suddenly has a trauma that happens to them that leads to mental health issues, or maybe they know someone else, they can be able to support them. They can be able to support themselves, because this is not a new concept to them. And they have seen it, and they have a story in their mind that can actually help back them. So incorporating mental health in our everyday lives, in our, you know, in our families, in our workplace, breaks down the stigma and actually helps us be supportive to our friends, because it gives us an idea of how to deal with mental health, what we need to do, what we shouldn't do in that format. So, you know, I've discussed a couple of stuff, and, you know, in case you come up with any ideas, one thing that I would say is that don't be afraid to speak up. Don't be afraid to, you know, speak about that idea that comes to your mind, because that idea could be the next big thing, and it could be the thing that could change the community, your society, your place, your workplace, your home. Speak up for your rights, speak up for mental health, because you might be wondering, you know, how does high quality mental health services look like? These are stigma free, they are recovery oriented, they are evidence informed, culturally safe and linguistically appropriate, equitable and inclusive. And obviously, inclusive is such a huge part, because this means that it creates a world or a society whereby mental health can actually grow the community, and it can, you know, create a bond in the community. So why we talk about mental health here, let's say on my podcast, or why you'll hear other people, mental health in general, is because they want all these different characteristics that I've mentioned of mental health, of it being stigma-free, recovery-oriented, evidence-informed, and all this. They want that high quality. They want people to receive these kinds of services of mental health. But the truth is that, have we really reached the high quality of mental health? I mean, we see stories every day of, you know, a person went to the hospital and it took them 3 months before they got to see a psychiatrist. Or you make an appointment with a psychiatrist, you can even take 6 months without seeing a psychiatrist. Sometimes, you know, people are prescribed medication, and with mental health medication, you have to take it for a period of time, and you find that after a while, they can't have access to that medication. And, you know, that's where the issue comes in. Like, are we catering more fast for the money, or are we thinking about someone? Because if someone is, and maybe they go into a money crisis, there should be these kinds of, you know, grants and all these things which can still cater for a person who still needs to use their medication. They still need their medication, which will cater for their, you know, for their lives, because maybe they depend on the medication to live a productive life with, as they, you know, work through living with a mental health issue. But just because they can't afford that medication, they have to suffer. I feel like these are some of the things that we need as a government, as organization, and we look to more solutions, because the truth is we are still lacking in the compartment of high quality mental health services. Thank you so much for joining me today. I loved recording, and I obviously would always love to be around when it comes to discussing, you know, ways we can improve mental health, ways we can make mental health inclusive and stigma free. Thank you so much. It was your girl Tracy. Have a blessed weekend.